This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, powered by the Family Research Council, your embassy of faith, family, and freedom in the heart of our nation's capital. Now, here's your host, FRC President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up on this Tuesday edition, big news in Washington, D.C., and good news, I might add. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson being replaced with CIA Director Mike Pompeo. Now, folks, this is huge. Finally, the agency located at Foggy Bottom, the heart of the D.C. swamp, will have a change agent at the helm that I believe is reflective of President Trump. Congressman Ted Poe of Texas joins us on that story in just a moment. And co-host of ABC's The Wrong View, Joy Behar, unleashed a firestorm of opposition from conservatives for claiming hearing from Jesus is the definition of mental illness. The Media Research Center launched a campaign calling for people to contact some of ABC Disney's sponsors. Today, to her credit, Joy Behar apologized on the air. We'll talk about it with Tim Graham of the Media Research Center. And the White House over the weekend announced an education Education Secretary Betsy DeVos will chair a new federal commission on school safety, part of the administration's response to the school shooting in Parkland, Florida. Former Secretary of the Department of Education and drug czar, our good friend Dr. Bill Bennett, will be here to discuss that topic. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you happen to be on Twitter, you can keep up with me at TPerkins. Hey, I mentioned this yesterday, but I want to especially remind you pastors and maybe folks, you can encourage your pastor to check in to this. That is our annual Watchman on the Wall pastors briefing that will be taking place in Washington, D.C., May 23rd through the 25th. A great lineup of speakers, as always. Several of our friends from Capitol Hill will be there, along with a number of prominent pastors and leaders. For the first year, Kay Arthur will be with us, one of my favorites, founder of Precept Ministries, will be there primarily so that the ladies who come, the wives that come with their husbands won't feel left out. She'll have a great message. We'll hear from Congressman Mark Meadows, Senator James Lankford, Josh McDowell will be there, Alex McFarland, Todd Wagner, senior pastor at Watermark Church in Dallas, Texas, Jim Garlow, Bishop Harry Jackson. A whole bunch. Don't have time to go to all of them, but check it out. Go to TonyPerkins.com, and you can follow the links over. Again, that's May 23 through 25, in Washington, D.C., the Watchman on the Wall Pastors Conference for pastors that you can encourage your pastor to attend. Okay, really, really big news this morning via Twitter. President Donald Trump announcing that Rex Tillerson is out and Mike Pompeo is in. I believe this is the most significant personnel change to be made by this president. This is very significant. Here's what the president had to say this morning as he was leaving the White House.
I've worked with Mike Pompeo now for quite some time. Tremendous energy, tremendous intellect. We're always on the same wavelength. The relationship has been very good, and that's what I need as Secretary of State. I'm really at a point where we're getting very close to having the cabinet and other things that I want. But I think Mike Pompeo will be a truly great Secretary of State. I have total confidence in him. And as far as Rex Tillerson is concerned, I very much appreciate his commitment and his service, and I wish him well. Rex is a very good man. I like Rex a lot. I really appreciate his commitment and his service. And I'll be speaking to Rex over a long period of time.
With us now, Congressman Ted Poe of Texas. He represents the 2nd Congressional District of the Lone Star State. He serves on the House Committee on Foreign Affairs, which has oversight of the Department of State. Congressman, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Always good to talk to you, Tony.
Well, Ted, let me get your initial reaction to the announcement this morning that your former colleague, Mike Pompeo, will be heading up the State Department.
Here's the difference, I think, between Tillerson, who I think the world of, a friend of mine before he came up to Washington, and Pompeo, who I also know. The president wants somebody in the State Department who handles the State Department as the president would. So he wants his person there, and Pompeo will be that person. He will do what the president wants done as far as internationally and diplomatically through the State Department. And I think that is the biggest difference. It's no secret that Rex Tillerson and the president have disagreed in the past, which is fine. But the president wants somebody to carry out his agenda, not the Secretary of State's agenda. And Pompeo will do that. I mean, the president, and this is his mode of operation, his business career. He changed people in his businesses when they didn't really agree with him to fulfill his goal and his agenda. And so it's not really new for the president to make this type of a change. He's got someone now that will view the world and treat the world diplomatically the way the president wants it done. So that's why this happened. I don't think really there's a lot of surprise in Washington about this. People knew it was coming, and Rex Tillerson was in the process of really updating the State Department. As we all know, the State Department sometimes is a entity unto itself. I have traveled all over and seen
that's a very diplomatic term.
Well, they're full of career
diplomats. They're full of themselves.
Yes,
they're full of themselves.
I even found that even overseas, they don't really represent the interest of the United States. In some cases, they represent their own interest. And we have those people that are leftovers from the last administration. And Tillerson was in the process of, I think, fixing that problem. But anyway, Pompeo will finish that off so that the State Department is a reflection of what the president wants our foreign policy to be, as it should.
Yes, it should be. That's what it should be. But I think he's grown a little impatient, which I don't blame him. My listeners know I was never a fan of Rex Tillerson because of some of the things that he had done prior to coming into the State Department. I didn't see him as a change agent. And, you know, I think of all of the federal agencies, the State Department is, I think, the most out of sync with American values and what they're promoting overseas. And I'm sure you've seen it entertaining foreign diplomats. I have in talking to foreign ambassadors and others who scratch their head with what our State Department has been proposing and promoting overseas that are clearly out of sync with American values. And so I do think that what we're going to see now is Mike Pompeo is more of a change agent. But you said, and I agree, I heard these rumors were back in November that this may have been taking place and had conversations with some of the parties involved. Why do you think it just now happened?
Well, only the president knows that. I think he was just ready for Pompeo to come in and take over. I think that's really why the president waited for it or made that decision today. Tillerson finished out the month, and then Pompeo. But the president is a person who is expecting change right away. And I don't think that Rex Tillerson was bringing the change that the president wanted, but also that they disagreed even publicly on some things. And the president really gets the only vote on what policy should be for the United States foreign policy. It's not the Secretary of State's really prerogative to determine what our policy will be. It's the president. And so the president has somebody that will follow him, follow what he is, wants his agenda to be.
I mean, that's tough. I mean, look, you had, to his credit from that standpoint, I'm not in any way going to offend Rex Tillerson. I disagreed with him with so many things. But, I mean, the guy was the head of one of the largest corporations in the world, ExxonMobil. And then all of us, I mean, when you're at the helm of a private company like that, you call the shots. You've got a board of directors, I get that. But you have a lot of latitude. Then you come in for the president, and as you said, and the way it's supposed to be and the way it is, that you have to follow the direction of the president. That may be hard for some people.
Yes, I think it might be hard for some people, but they disagreed on some things, and it's been public on some of the things, and now we have everybody's on the same page in the hymnal. The Secretary of State will be following the directive of the president on foreign policy, and get it done. Get the president's policy done, not the State Department's policy.
And Congressman Ted Poe, from your perspective, and we've talked about a number of these issues, what are, it's not just one, but what are the top foreign policy issues that are going to be sitting there on the desk waiting for Mike Pompeo?
Well, North Korea will be one, and also our other nemesis, Iran, on the other side of the globe. But on a structural level, it's like what we've already talked about. I think there will be some reforming of the State Department to reflect the position of the United States as to each country. And I don't think that's happening. I've traveled all over the world. I've visited with our Foreign Service people, and many times they are making the determination as to what our policy should be to that specific country, really without guidance from the administration. I think that is going to change tremendously, so that when an ambassador speaks in Hungary or some other place, it will be what the president's policy, what the president wants that policy to be. And I think that's going to be a real big structural change in the State Department.
You didn't mention Russia. How big of an issue is that going to be for Mike Pompeo?
Well, of course, that is still be a... I'd be third on the list. I would, after North Korea and Iran and Russia as well. And Mike Pompeo has the experience to know what the Russians are doing. How about that for?
Yeah, and that's a good way to put it.
What's going on with Russia? Not that Tillerson didn't, but he does, and I think he and the president will see eye to eye on how to deal with Russia. And it still will be the president's call on how we treat the Russians and their
I'm not surprised at all by the president's characterization of his relationship with Mike Pompeo from a few flies on the wall in the cabinet meetings. That's the kind of the intel I get, that they are very much in sync in the way they see the world. Before we let you go, Congressman Ted Poe, your anticipation of the president's pending talks with the North Korean dictator, what do you think might come of that?
I think that I think it's good. I think it's good that he's going. I do not think that the president's going to take the bait like the previous three administrations did about, we'll stop our nuclear development if you give us stuff. And I don't think the president's going to be taking that bait. But I think it's a good idea that the president try to settle this issue diplomatically instead of in some other military way, especially.
Well, I'm glad the president's having that talk, and I'm glad I had the chance to talk with you. Congressman Ted Poe, as always, great to talk with you.
Always good talking to you, too. Thank you, Tony.
All right. Congressman Ted Poe of Texas. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, coming up next, Joy Behar finally publicly apologized for her anti-Christian comments on The View. Tim Graham of the Media Research Center is here. When we return, don't miss any of Washington Watch, because we're coming back right after this.
What does sex trafficking, abortion, and pornography have in common? A lot, as it turns out, and all three are on the rise across the world. Today, almost 45.8 million people live in slavery around the world, and around 4.5 million people are slaves in the sex industry. Those who consume pornography are much more likely to seek women for paid sex, many of whom are victims of sex trafficking. Each click of pornography creates demand for more pornography and brings in a profit to the sex industry. The demand causes traffickers, pimps, and those involved in the sex industry to abuse their victims by filming them in sex acts. To learn more about the link between these issues and to find out how you can help stop it, go to frc.org/traffic. Again, that's frc.org/traffic.
Gender reassignment surgery. Once rare and unusual, it is now becoming more and more common. Across the nation, transgender activists are pushing for this costly, extreme, and unproven procedure to be declared medically necessary so that it can be paid for with taxpayer dollars. The problem for these activists is that the evidence is not on their side. In 2016, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services examined 33 studies on the subject and declared that there was not enough evidence to determine whether gender reassignment surgery improved health outcomes. One study found that those who had undergone gender reassignment surgery showed a suicide rate that was 19 times higher than the general population. Declaring gender reassignment surgery to be medically necessary is not only inaccurate, but dangerous. To view FRC's full report on this important issue, visit frc.org/surgery. Again, that's frc.org/surgery.
Is being right enough to win an election? Many tend to believe that being right, in the sense of being factually correct, is sufficient to win in politics. Unfortunately, political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Arnakis knows how to win. As senior director for the Leadership Institute, the nation's premier public policy training organization, he has 15 years of grassroots organizing, campaign, fundraising, and communications experience, and has established himself as one of the country's top political trainers. Hear Mr. Arnakis discuss the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election. Go to frc.org/speakers to view this timely discussion.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, at T Perkins. All right. After intense public pressure, about 40,000 contacts to ABC Disney to apologize for her anti-Christian comments made about Vice President Mike Pence on ABC's The View, host Joy Behar, finally, she privately apologized to the vice president, but today publicly apologized for saying it. This is what Joy Behar had to say on The Wrong View this morning.
Last night, the vice president was on Sean Hannity talking about the recent conversation he had with Joy Behar. Take a look.
You and I know the criticism comes with public life, but I felt it was important that I defend the faith of tens of millions of Americans against that kind of slander. And I did so. And, you know, I give Joy Behar a lot of credit. She picked up the phone. She called me. She was very sincere. And she apologized. And one of the things my faith teaches me is grace. Forgive as you've been forgiven.
So does mine, but I'm not as good at it as you.
Well, look, but I said to Joy, of course I forgive you. That's part of my faith experience, but I did encourage her, and I'm still encouraging her, to use the forum of that program or some other public forum to apologize to tens of millions of Americans who were equally offended.
So I think Vice President Pence is right. I was raised to respect everyone's religious faith, and I fell short of that. I sincerely apologize for what I said.
Okay.
With us now is Tim Graham, executive editor of Newsbusters and the Media Research Center's director of media analysis. And it was the Media Research Center that undertook an effort to apply pressure to help Joy and them see the light on this issue. Tim, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, sir.
This is a positive development.
Absolutely. And I think that this is shows you know, not just of what we can do as the people who watch these shows and monitor them and write down what they say, but just the power of people to reach out to Disney and ABC and say, this is not acceptable. I think we all understand Joy Behar would not make remarks like this about Muslim Americans or Jewish Americans, and so she shouldn't be making jokes about the prayers of Christian Americans.
It's significant from a standpoint of her personally owning up to this and apologizing. This actually became an issue, I think, over the weekend with Disney's board meeting. Their chairman asked about this. I think it's significant because now you have a, you know, an entity like ABC Disney on record saying, you know what, this is not appropriate. We apologize for this. I know Joy took the initiative there, but I would imagine that she was probably being prodded a little bit from behind.
Yes, and let's give a little credit to Justin Danhoff, the National Center for Public Policy Research, who goes to these stockholder meetings and asks these questions and forces Bob Iger to address this issue. So hooray, and hopefully that had something to do with it. Look, this is just the same thing, is that the news media try to hold everybody else accountable. These are the little moments. And I know it's weird to think of the View as a news show, but it is under the news division of ABC. Hold them to some accountable standard of being civil. You know, obviously that show's never been a balanced show, but it ought to at least be non-slanderous.
So how many folks responded to the initiative here that MRC undertook to bring this attention to not only Joy, obviously, but to Disney and ABC?
Yeah, we had 40,000 calls, and that is it's a really good, strong number. I think it means that Grant Bozell knew this was the right battle to wage. This was the right person and the right program to suggest, you know, this is a show that presidents and presidential candidates appear on seeking the women's vote. So if it's that august a forum, then it is absolutely something that we should expect. And, of course, we didn't just contact Disney. We had our grassroots army contacting the sponsors of the program, even to the effect that we had a message or a billboard truck circling the headquarters of Clorox in Oakland last week. So Clorox, maybe you have an extra standard for brightness. Hopefully they got the message and sent it to Disney.
Well, I do think that Brent Bozell has an eye for this, and clearly this was over the line in what she said. But again, I tweeted out this morning, I give her credit for acknowledging that these comments were inappropriate. And I do hope that this then sets a standard, because I think each time an incident like this occurs, and of course when there's a response and you help facilitate that response, that it shows that this is a matter that people are offended by, they take very serious, and it sets a new standard, kind of taking background, saying this is inappropriate public conversation.
And obviously we have a secular media that wants us always to respect the boundaries of religion. They always think there's way too much, you know, Christmas music or whatever. There's way too much Christianity in the culture. They're always trying to make sure we insist that secular people get respected. And that's a two-way street. And that's what we're trying to make the point of, you know, obviously the Christians try very hard to be civil people and respect other people's beliefs and opinions. I just think there are some times that the liberal elites don't show the same respect.
I think you're absolutely right. Well, kudos to the Media Research Center for a job well done. Tim, great to be with
you.
Thanks for being with us today. Tim Graham, executive editor of Newsbusters and the Media Research Center's director for media analysis. And for those of you who responded to our call on this, both through my email and through the radio program, thank you. This is important. It is a significant development. All right, when we come back, we're going to be talking about the Department of Education, the president calling for a federal commission that will look into school violence. Former Secretary of the Department of Education and Drug Czar, the Dr. Bill Bennett, is here after the break. Don't go away. We're back with more Washington Watch right after this.
If
you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God, but culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay. Is being right enough to win an election? Political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Ornakis is one of the country's top political trainers. Hear him discuss the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election at frc.org/speakers. The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue. If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God, but culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Tuesday afternoon. Over the weekend, the Trump administration announced the formation of a new federal school safety commission tasked with broadly examining ways to protect schools from gun violence, something that has unfortunately become, I would say, near pandemic in the last two decades. With us now is Bill Bennett, former Secretary of the Department of Education from 1985 to 1988. He's the author of The Book of Virtues, one of my favorite, among many, many other titles. In fact, one of his more recent ones is Tried by Fire, an excellent book, which we've had him on the program talking about before. He is one of America's most important, influential, and respected voices on culture, political, and educational issues. He was also the drug czar for the president, President Reagan, as well. Joining us now is Dr. Bennett himself. Bill, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, but you left out the most important thing. Honored by your organization. I mean, my goodness,
leadership award.
Leadership right. Award. What a great evening. What a great night. Anyway, thank you. Thank you.
Well, that was one way I could make sure that you were there and I could listen to you speak, because I just you are one of my favorite speakers. Every time you you talk, you're a wealth of knowledge.
Thanks.
And I like to see your wife too.
You betcha.
You like me. You married up.
I know, that's for sure. That's for sure. She's really working it. She's in the schools, actually. Not a bad place to start our conversation.
It is. In fact, that's one of the reasons I have you on, because you see this from a holistic perspective. It's not just a matter of controlling instruments of violence, but it's shaping the character of the kids as well as shaping the culture.
Elaine Bennett, running the Best Friends Foundation, was doing, at the very moment of that shooting, was doing a seminar in inner city Washington called Stop the Silence, End the Silence, Prevent the Violence. If you see something, say something. If you hear trouble coming from a student, tell a responsible adult. You know, one of the interesting things overlooked in Parkland is that when the shooting started, a number of the students said, "Oh, that's Cruz. That's Nick Cruz." They know who it was. Of course, the breakdown of the system there in all the ways that have been chronicled, you know, from FBI, local police, the counseling services, to all the other things. That's the first and most obvious candidate. When you have all these things in place and they all seemingly broke down at the same time, it wasn't going to be long before you had trouble. But I'd step back because, as you said, cultural issues. One other thing that hasn't been commented on, Tony, of the 27 major shootings of this sort, school shootings, church shootings.
I think we just hold on, Bill. I think we're fading in and out. Let me see if we can try it again. Yeah. Okay. Go ahead.
Better. Okay.
Yeah.
Of the 27 shootings of this sort that we've had in the last couple of decades, to use your reference point, six of them were done by young men who did not grow up with their biological fathers. So you won't hear much of that on TV or in the newspapers, but I think it's an important factor. And by the way, if you were making a Hollywood movie in the history of this, no doubt Hollywood would have half the shooters being women and the other half being men. But, of course, in reality, they were all men, all boys. Just a couple of cultural guideposts there.
Well, let me ask you this, Dr. Bennett, this commission that is being put in place to look at this. I know that the president is one of the issues is they're going to look at the gun control issue from a standpoint of the age limits on guns. It does appear that they're going to take a holistic approach, I think mental illness. But I don't know if even for this administration, especially, you know, in the Department of Education, to take on those issues of family structure, the breakdown of the family, as well as the point that I've made, you know, when we removed God and this, you know, what George Washington said, that we don't think that you can have morality without religion. As we've removed religion from the public square, what then becomes the basis for any type of morality that respects the lives of others?
Yeah, no, of course. Now you're back to, you know, final causes, as Aristotle would say. Ultimate cause of this, cultural guardrails, beliefs, values, spirituality. You go into these schools, and although, you know, I've been to 600 schools now, I'm a professional school visitor, and I can size them up pretty well, you know, within the first 10 or 15 minutes. And the most important thing about a school is its ethos, its cultural environment. And that's just a fancy way of saying its moral environment. You know, is it, do they know who they are? Do they know what they're supposed to do? Is there a sense of propriety? Are there rules, both stated and unstated? And you can pick that up pretty well. But what you're talking about is, of course, true. A lot of these kids are rudderless, virtually rudderless, and that's the problem.
Dr. Bennett, we're up. You understand music. You've hosted a radio program. Yep. That means you're up against a break. Can you possibly hold on? Through the break.
I know there's a lot to talk about. You bet.
Well, I want to get your take on what you think would be helpful for this commission to come up with. What do they need to do to address this issue? Dr. Bill Bennett sticking around. I hope you will as well. We're going to finish our conversation with him, and we're going to talk to you this afternoon here on Washington Watch. So don't go away. We're coming back with more right after this message.
What does sex trafficking, abortion, and pornography have in common? A lot, as it turns out, and all three are on the rise across the world. Today, almost 45.8 million people live in slavery around the world, and around 4.5 million people are slaves in the sex industry. Those who consume pornography are much more likely to seek women for paid sex, many of whom are victims of sex trafficking. Each click of pornography creates demand for more pornography and brings in a profit to the sex industry. The demand causes traffickers, pimps, and those involved in the sex industry to abuse their victims by filming them in sex acts. To learn more about the link between these issues and to find out how you can help stop it, go to frc.org/traffic. Again, that's frc.org/traffic.
Gender reassignment surgery. Once rare and unusual, it is now becoming more and more common. Across the nation, transgender activists are pushing for this costly, extreme, and unproven procedure to be declared medically necessary so that it can be paid for with taxpayer dollars. The problem for these activists is that the evidence is not on their side. In 2016, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services examined 33 studies on the subject and declared that there was not enough evidence to determine whether gender reassignment surgery improved health outcomes. One study found that those who had undergone gender reassignment surgery showed a suicide rate that was 19 times higher than the general population. Declaring gender reassignment surgery to be medically necessary is not only inaccurate, but dangerous. To view FRC's full report on this important issue, visit frc.org/surgery. Again, that's frc.org/surgery.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God, but culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, Dr. Bill Bennett, my guest, talking about the announcement from the Trump administration that a task force was going to be put together, commissioned to look at school violence. Dr. Bennett, thanks for sticking around after class and talking with us here.
Staying after school.
Yeah, you're staying after school here. Not to put any, not to say anything here, but you were Secretary of Education shortly after I graduated from high school. In the last 30 years, the cultural social indicators have only gotten worse. Mm-hmm. How do we work our way back from this? I mean, this is when parents, are putting their kids on school buses and literally they kissing them, not knowing if they're going to make it home. I mean, it's become that bad.
Yeah, well, let me be fair and correct something I said earlier, or at least qualify it. Schools may be places that have lost God and lost spirituality, lost a good and decent and moral ethos. They may be unmoored and, not grounded in anything important and serious. But this was an outsider. This was a guy who was out of the school, as was the situation in other cases. I mean, look at the murderer in Charleston who went into the church. Look at the murderer in Sandy Hook. What do you see here? You see a pattern. These were boys who were seriously neglected, abused, abandoned, maltreated, and you're going to have trouble with a certain percentage of such boys. I remember a thing that stayed in my mind, I'll say to you, as a Marine. You're a Marine, right? I have a son who's a Marine.
I know.
Boys will grow up, guy told me, boys will grow up to be Marines or Bloods and Crips. He said, well, actually, most of them will end up in the middle. But, you got to take care. The architecture of the soul, which is a phrase I like very much, and we need to pay attention to it. And, I know they're going to talk about weapons, and they're going to talk about, background searches and all that, and that's fine. And I don't think schools should be the only places in America, that advertise we're gun-free, because the crazy guy with a gun knows he's not going to face anything.
And most of them are cowards. And most of them, by the way, are cowards.
Sure. And they'll walk the other way, but then they'll find something else.
Yeah.
Think of Charleston. there's a lot they can recommend. You know, former military in the schools. Yes, if teachers or coaches have training, sure. But, you know, the real remedy is to grow more civilized. And to grow more yes. civilized means to take yes. care in the raising of young people. And that means moral and spiritual development as well as anything else, everything else.
Yeah, we can't just address the symptoms. I think if we're really going right. to get a handle on this, we've got to go to the cause. And I actually think this president is more open. If people will make a informed, educated presentation to him of what needs to happen based upon the social sciences, yeah. I think this president will be open to it.
Yeah, I mean, he's got great instincts on a lot of things, as you know. And I think if we get the right people, I'm worried about commissions. I don't know how many I've seen, Tony. How many have you seen, you know? And this president actually, during the campaign, railed against commissions. He said, time for commissions is over. Well, maybe the swamp has struck back here on this one. But if it's a good commission and they talk about real things, which is the condition of our young people and the condition of the culture, fatherlessness, the opiate epidemic, we're going to have more real serious problem children because of this horrible epidemic. And these are the things that need to be addressed. This is why we have trouble and fear, I think.
Well, I don't know if they have. Maybe they have. The administration hasn't reached out to you. I certainly want to encourage them to do this because I do think that your holistic understanding of the problem and approach to solving it is much needed. And, you know, you talk about the architecture of the soul. I think the best way to deal with that is go back to the architect. And there's yeah, very sure clear guidance of what we need as human beings. And as you point out, the tragedy of so many of these young boys who grow up without fathers, either physically absent or emotionally absent, I mean, something is going to fill the void in their life. And
that's right.
And if it's not the right thing, it's going to end up maybe not in a public tragedy like the shooting in Parkland, but it's played out time and time again upon the personal tragedy of lives lived unfulfilled.
Yep, nature abhors a vacuum, and so does the developing soul. If it's not filled with the right things, it'll be filled with the wrong things. You know that phrase, I love you, heard me say it. Successful life, the forces of composition have to outweigh the forces of decomposition. And the greatest force of composition in the world, of course, is what you've talked about, our belief in God and our belief that there are certain ways we are supposed to live and certain ways we are not supposed to live.
Yes. Well, I appreciate the contribution you've made to civil society and the education you continue to do. Especially for men and for dads. I think what you've put out there has been so instrumental in helping them understand how to build boys into young men.
Thank you. And look what you've become. Really? You graduated from high school when I was Secretary Mike?
No, right before. I was in the Marine Corps when you were Secretary
yeah.
of Education.
All right. That's
a little better. Hey, before I let you go, tell me, what is it that you see right now on the horizon that gives you great hope for our country?
This presidency, frankly. You know, I've been put in the same situation you have a lot of times. Hey, you wrote the Book of Virtues. How can you support this guy? Because you take a man in the totality of his actions. There are things he's done and said I don't approve of at all. But I think he's got his finger on the pulse on a lot of things. And I think his policies are much more in line on many things than many other presidents. I think he is making progress and moving forward and showing a respect for things which may not be deep in his heart, but for which he has respect. His respect for you, your organization, similar organizations. I remember when he said during the campaign, one of the things that really moved him was the support of the evangelical community. And he said, I'm not sure I deserve it. It was a very humble and moving statement. I have a lot of hope here.
I do, too. I do, too.
A lot of hope.
There's a lot of opportunity on the horizon, but I think the window could be narrow. We got to seize it now. Dr. Bill Bennett, always great to talk with you, my friend. Thanks for coming on today.
Thanks, Tony. Semper Fi.
All right. Semper Fi. Dr. Bill Bennett, great American. All right, your phone calls. We'll talk about any of the topics here. We've got a few minutes left, whether it's the new Secretary of State, whether it's Joy Behar making a public apology for her comments about hearing from God is equivalent to mental illness, or the task force that we were just talking about with Dr. Bill Bennett. 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234, the number to call to get on the conversation here in the next 10 minutes that we've got left. I think the best news I've heard today is the fact of what we started the program with, that Mike Pompeo has been tapped to be Secretary of State. This, folks, is enormous. It's a sea change. It goes from basically studying and managing the problem to addressing the problem and handling it. Now, let me give you one narrow sliver, but an important one. The issue we talk about quite a bit here, and that's international religious freedom. The State Department, tasked with promoting that in all our foreign policy, had put it to the back burner. In fact, it knocked it off the stove as it was eclipsed by the LGBT pro-abortion agenda under Obama and Clinton. And it really hadn't changed that much. A little bit, but not much. And it takes someone to wrestle the direction of the State Department, moving it in the opposite direction of what it's been going in. I think Mike Pompeo will do that, and I think you will see with Ambassador Sam Brownback as the Ambassador-at-Large for Religious Freedom, finally the State Department, among other things, addressing this crisis. It's a crisis around the world of the persecution, religious persecution, primarily of Christians. So very, 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 very positive development, folks. All right, let's go to Joe in Ohio. Joe, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi. Can you hear me?
I can. Go right ahead.
Okay, yeah. Thanks for all that you do, and I'd like to encourage your listeners in Western Pennsylvania to get out and vote for the true conservative, Rick Saccone, and also support the conservatives running in the primaries coming up. You know, you can send your money directly to the conservative candidates. We've got some great Christian conservatives out there, Marsha Blackburn in Tennessee. Please urge your listeners not to send the money to the Republican establishment in Washington. Send it directly to the conservative candidates. If they're not sure who they can support, they can always support the Freedom Caucus and the Tea Party. But we're, as you know, well know, that you know, the country's on the brink. The conservatives stayed home in 2008 and 2012, and we've been paying the price. So we need to get the conservatives out in the primaries and in the general election. Thanks for all that you do.
All right. Thank you, Joe, and thank you for that reminder. I should have done it at the top of the program and forgot. If you live in Pennsylvania in the 18th Congressional District, there is a special election that is taking place. It's going to be very, very close. It all comes out down to turnout. All right. The polls close at 8 p.m. Eastern time. So if you've not yet voted, make sure you go and vote. Thank you, Ron, for that reminder. Go and vote if you live in Pennsylvania, the 18th Congressional District. Let me tell you what's going to happen if the Democrats win. It's a very, very close race. If the liberals win that race, they're going to claim that this is a referendum on Trump. If the Republicans win, the conservatives win, it's going to say, well, you know, he should have won. It was a conservative district. But it's the narrative that will be used against to try to stall the conservative agenda that's taking place. All right, let's go to North Carolina where Zach is on the line. Zach, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Fine. I wanted to make a comment on all the gun violence that we're seeing. You know, it's interesting that, you know, before Jesus went back up to heaven, the last thing he said was, go therefore and make disciples. And we're looking at, you know, what I work in engineering, and, you know, when you look at a problem, you're trying to figure out what caused it. You look at what changed. Guns mm-hmm. have been everywhere. Violence, you know, methods for doing it. They've mostly been available, and what changed is, you know, I think it's we haven't been teaching our children. You know, people didn't used to have this stuff everywhere, and you didn't worry about shootings in schools, but now we are, and I think it goes back to that is, Everybody knows of Jesus, but no one's been trained or discipled, and it starts in the home. You don't have fathers around, mothers, and then you've got the next generation that's been raised in that environment, and they don't know because they haven't been taught. And I think that just gets back to the root of the problem. Until we start discipling our children and discipling those around us, we won't see a change in something like this.
Zach, couldn't say it better. I think you're absolutely right. I think we've got to go beyond the symptoms to deal, so we were talking about with Dr. Bennett, the really the cause of this problem. And let's look at what has changed in our society. It's not really the availability of weapons. I mean, you go back to Cain and Abel, and, you know, you can kill with almost anything. And we've actually seen it. We've seen it in knives used. We've seen cars used. We've seen bombs used. We've seen guns. But it's really going to the vacuum, the moral and spiritual vacuum that has been created in the lives of our kids, either through the absence of fathers and through the cultural forces and influences that are out there, whether it's in the media, or whether it's even in our schools. Zach, I think you're absolutely right. And until we're ready to have that hard conversation, we're not going to solve the problem. Zach, thanks for listening. Appreciate you calling. I do think that if we really want to solve the problem, we've got to have the hard conversation. And again, I go back to George Washington. And folks, if you've never read it, up until, you know, I don't know, in the last few decades, I mean, this was the treatise on government. I mean, if you were in any government class, because they don't teach government anymore, civics, anything like that, this is what you read. This was the father of the country, George Washington, in his farewell address. And if you've not read it, I would really encourage you to do it. In fact, I believe every year they read it on the floor of the Senate. In fact, I think Ben Sass read it last time. Google it, farewell address, George Washington. And in this, you know, he talks about the pillars of our republic. And those two great pillars, morality and religion. And he said, you know, let me caution you with the supposition that you can have morality without religion. And he goes on to excoriate, to just really completely cut out the foundation from those who would suggest that you can have morality without religion. And so I would, anyway, encourage you to take a look at that. If we really want to address this problem, we've got to address the issue of morality. And that begins with religion. All right, folks, out of time. Thanks so much for joining us. I leave you once again with the words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, you've done everything you can do, and you prayed, prepared, and taken your stand. By all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. Again, that's 1-866-372-7234.